I had done all in my power to make my children comfortable during the time I expected to be separated from them. I was packing my things when Grandmother came into the room and asked what I was doing. "I am putting my things in order," I replied. I tried to look and speak cheerfully, but her watchful eye detected something beneath the surface. She drew me towards her and asked me to sit down. She looked earnestly at me and said, "Linda, do you want to kill your old grandmother? Do you mean to leave your little helpless children? I am old now and cannot do for your babies as I once did for you." I replied that if I went away, perhaps their father would be able to secure their freedom. "Ah, my child," she said, "don't trust too much to him. Stand by your own children and suffer with them till death. Nobody respects a mother who forsakes her children, and if you leave them, you will never have a happy moment. If you go, you will make me miserable the short time I have to live. You would be taken and brought back, and your sufferings would be dreadful. Remember poor Benjamin? Do give it up, Linda. Try to bear a little longer. Things may turn out better than we expect." My courage failed me. In view of the sorrow I should bring on that faithful, loving old heart, I promised that I would try longer and that I would take nothing out of her house without her knowledge. Whenever the children climbed on my knee or laid their heads on my lap, she would say, "Poor little souls, what would you do without a mother? She don't love you as I do." And she would hug them to her own bosom as if to reproach me for my want of affection. But she knew all the while that I loved them better than my life. I slept with her that night, and it was the last time. The memory of it haunted me for many a year. On Monday, I returned to the plantation and busied myself with preparations for the important day. Wednesday came. It was a beautiful day, and the faces of the slaves were as bright as the sunshine. The poor creatures were merry. They were expecting little presents from the bride and hoping for better times under her administration. Page 116. I had no such hopes for them. I knew that the young wives of slaveholders often thought their authority and importance would be best established and maintained by cruelty. And what I had heard of young Mrs. Flint gave me no reason to expect that her rule over them would be less severe than that of the master and overseer. Truly, the colored race are the most cheerful and forgiving people on the face of the earth. That their masters sleep in safety is owing to their superabundance of heart, and yet they look upon their sufferings with less pity than they would bestow on those of a horse or a dog. I stood at the door with others to receive the bridegroom and bride. She was a handsome, delicate-looking girl, and her face flushed with emotion at sight of her new home. I thought it likely that visions of a happy future were rising before her. It made me sad, for I knew how soon clouds would come over her sunshine. She examined every part of the house and told me she was delighted with the arrangements I had made. I was afraid old Mrs. Flint had tried to prejudice her against me, and I did my best to please her. All passed off smoothly for me until dinner time arrived. I did not mind the embarrassment of waiting on a dinner party for the first time in my life, half so much as I did the meeting with Dr. Flint and his wife, who would be among the guests. It was a mystery to me why Mrs. Flint had not made her appearance at the plantation during all the time I was putting the house in order. I had not met her face to face for 5 years, and I had no wish to see her now. She was a praying woman, and doubtless considered my present position a special answer to her prayers. Nothing could please her better than to see me humbled and trampled upon. I was just where she would have me, in the power of a hard, unprincipled master. She did not speak to me when she took her seat at table, but her satisfied, triumphant smile when I handed her her plate was more eloquent than words. The old doctor was not so quiet in his demonstrations. He ordered me here and there and spoke with peculiar emphasis when he said, "Your mistress." I was drilled like a disgraced soldier. When all was over and the last key turned, I sought my pillow, thankful that God had appointed a season of rest for the weary. Page 117. The next day, my new mistress began her housekeeping. I was not exactly appointed maid of all work, but I was to do whatever I was told. Monday evening came. It was always a busy time. On that night, the slaves received their weekly allowance of food, 3 pounds of meat, a peck of corn, and perhaps a dozen herring were allowed to each man. Women received 1.5 pounds of meat, a peck of corn, and the same number of herring. Children over 12 years old had half the allowance of the women. The meat was cut and weighed by the foreman of the field hands and piled on planks before the meat house. Then the second foreman went behind the building, and when the first foreman called out, "Who takes this piece of meat?" he answered by calling somebody's name. This method was resorted to as a means of preventing partiality in distributing the meat. The young mistress came out to see how things were done on her plantation, and she soon gave a specimen of her character. Among those waiting for their allowance was a very old slave who had faithfully served the Flint family through 3 generations. When he hobbled up to get his bit of meat, the mistress said he was too old to have any allowance, that when niggers were too old to work, they ought to be fed on grass. Poor old man! He suffered much before he found rest in the grave. My mistress and I got along very well together. At the end of a week, old Mrs. Flint made us another visit and was closeted a long time with her daughter-in-law. I had my suspicions what was the subject of the conference. The old doctor's wife had been informed that I could leave the plantation on one condition, and she was very desirous to keep me there. If she had trusted me, as I deserved to be trusted by her, she would have no fears of my accepting that condition. When she entered her carriage to return home, she said to young Mrs. Flint, "Don't neglect to send for them as quick as possible." My heart was on the watch all the time, and I at once concluded that she spoke of my children. The doctor came the next day, and as I entered the room to spread the table, I heard him say, "Don't wait any longer. Send for them tomorrow." Page 118. I saw through the plan. They thought my children's being there would fetter me to the spot, and that it was a good place to break us all in to abject submission to our lot as slaves. After the doctor left, a gentleman called, who had always manifested friendly feelings toward my grandmother and her family. Mr. Flint carried him over the plantation to show him the results of labor performed by men and women who were unpaid, miserably clothed, and half-famished. The cotton crop was all they thought of. It was duly admired, and the gentleman returned with specimens to show his friends. I was ordered to carry water to wash his hands. As I did so, he said, "Linda, how do you like your new home?" I told him I liked it as well as I expected. He replied, "They don't think you are contented, and tomorrow they are going to bring your children to be with you. I am sorry for you, Linda. I hope they will treat you kindly." I hurried from the room, unable to thank him. My suspicions were correct. My children were to be brought to the plantation to be broke in. To this day, I feel grateful to the gentleman who gave me this timely information. It nerved me to immediate action. Page 119. Starting Chapter 17. The Flight. Mr. Flint was hard pushed for house servants, and rather than lose me, he had restrained his malice. I did my work faithfully, though not, of course, with a willing mind. They were evidently afraid I should leave them. Mr. Flint wished that I should sleep in the great house instead of the servants' quarters. His wife agreed to the proposition, but said I mustn't bring my bed into the house because it would scatter feathers on her carpet. I knew when I went there that they would never think of such a thing as furnishing a bed of any kind for me and my little one. I therefore carried my own bed, and now I was forbidden to use it. I did as I was ordered. But now that I was certain my children were to be put in their power in order to give them a stronger hold on me, I resolved to leave them that night. I remembered the grief this step would bring upon my dear old grandmother, and nothing less than the freedom of my children would have induced me to disregard her advice. I went about my evening work with trembling steps. Mr. Flint twice called from his chamber door to inquire why the house was not locked up. I replied that I had not done my work. "You have had time enough to do it," he said. "Take care how you answer me." I shut all the windows, locked all the doors, and went up to the third story to wait until midnight. How long those hours seemed, and how fervently I prayed that God would not forsake me in this hour of utmost need. I was about to risk everything on the throw of a die, and if I failed, oh, what would become of me and my poor children? They would be made to suffer for my fault. Page 120. At 12:30, I stole softly downstairs. I stopped on the second floor, thinking I heard a noise. I felt my way down into the parlor and looked out of the window. The night was so intensely dark that I could see nothing. I raised the window very softly and jumped out. Large drops of rain were falling, and the darkness bewildered me. I dropped on my knees and breathed a short prayer to God for guidance and protection. I groped my way to the road and rushed towards the town with almost lightning speed. I arrived at my grandmother's house, but dared not see her. She would say, "Linda, you are killing me," and I knew that would unnerve me. I tapped softly at the window of a room occupied by a woman who had lived in the house several years. I knew she was a faithful friend and could be trusted with my secret. I tapped several times before she heard me. At last she raised the window, and I whispered, "Sally, I have run away. Let me in, quick." She opened the door softly and said in low tones, "For God's sake, don't. Your grandmother is trying to buy you and the children. Mr. Sands was here last week. He told her he was going away on business, but he wanted her to go ahead about buying you and the children, and he would help her all he could. Don't run away, Linda. Your grandmother is all bowed down with trouble now." I replied, "Sally, they are going to carry my children to the plantation tomorrow, and they will never sell them to anybody so long as they have me in their power. Now would you advise me to go back?" "No, child, no," she answered. "When they find you is gone, they won't want the plague of the children. But where is you going to hide? They knows every inch of this house." I told her I had a hiding place, and that was all it was best for her to know. I asked her to go into my room as soon as it was light and take all of my clothes out of my trunk and pack them in hers, for I knew Mr. Flint and the constable would be there early to search my room. I feared the sight of my children would be too much for my full heart, but I could not go out into the uncertain future without one last look. I bent over the bed where lay my little Benny and baby Ellen, poor little ones, fatherless and motherless. Page 121. Memories of their father came over me. He wanted to be kind to them, but they were not all to him as they were to my womanly heart. I knelt and prayed for the innocent little sleepers. I kissed them lightly and turned away. As I was about to open the street door, Sally laid her hand on my shoulder and said, "Linda, is you gwine all alone? Let me call your uncle." "No, Sally," I replied, "I want no one to be brought into trouble on my account." I went forth into the darkness and rain. I ran on till I came to the house of the friend who was to conceal me. Early the next morning, Mr. Flint was at my grandmother's inquiring for me. She told him she had not seen me and supposed I was at the plantation. He watched her face narrowly and said, "Don't you know anything about her running off?" She assured him that she did not. He went on to say, Last night she ran off without the least provocation. We had treated her very kindly. My wife liked her. She will soon be found and brought back. Are you her children with you? When told that they were, he said, I am very glad to hear that. If they are here, she cannot be far off. If I find out that any of my niggers had anything to do with this damned business, I'll give them 500 lashes.